When I was in Victoria recently, I was asked to write an article for the Victoria Times. Now, whether or not they will accept it is something else. But Lynn Downey was quite, shall I say, forceful in demanding that I should write an article for them. So I have written it, and I would like to read it to you. It will be available to all those who want a little bit later on. I have some other things to do with it first. It's entitled Lifestyles, Time for Reflection. Since the beginning of time, man has been developing new lifestyles to suit both his needs and his desires. His needs are basic for sustaining his life. His desires are usually multitudinous and endless. During the last two decades, man's lifestyles have changed to a remarkable degree. In many instances, resentment and disillusionment with the false front, the hypocritical side of that which he has labeled the establishment, has mounted to such a peak that he has almost lost his sense of values. Some have become nomads, wandering the face of the earth, looking for handouts. Some have gone back to the land and its primitive aspects. Others have let their hair and their beards grow. Many have rejected cleanliness physically, mentally, and emotionally, and in today's terminology, have placed themselves in the position of letting it all hang out. With his craving for alcohol, cigarettes, drugs, and sex predominant, he has forgotten his responsibility to God, to man, and to himself. In order to justify his actions and his self-indulgence, he tells himself and everyone he meets that after all, this is a new age, and one must of necessity go with the changing times. He denies the validity of the Ten Commandments and labels them archaic. He seems totally to have forgotten that the laws of man can be changed by man, but that the laws of God are immutable. We have but to look around us to see what havoc has been wrought by this present lifestyle. Our prisons, our mental and medical hospitals are filled to overflowing with those who have followed the various destructive paths in pursuit of the so-called pleasures of the senses. Many have committed crimes which they do not even remember having committed, while under the influence of drugs and or alcohol. Many have lost their memories and go around like walking zombies with blank looks on their faces. Some have taken drugs so powerfully destructive that they are, as far as their memory and intelligence are concerned, like little children having to be taught once again the fundamentals of elementary education. Murder, rape, and theft are daily occurrences. People are no longer safe on the streets or even in their own homes. Many couples are living together without benefit of marriage. Children are born from such unions with no guarantee or feeling of security. They are forced to bear the stigma of illegitimacy. The terrible, the unbelievable part of it all is that this mode of living is being taken for granted as being the perfectly acceptable thing to do in this new age. They take no thought of what bearing their actions will have not only on their own futures and those of their children, but also on that of the generations to come. They are building, in fact they have already built, a world in which security has no part. They are so enamored by their so-called sense of freedom, which in truth is nothing but license, that they fail to see that the path they are following is not only one of self-destruction, but the destruction of a whole world. Are these statements products of an overzealous, overwrought imagination? You have but to listen to the radio, look at the movies or television screen, read the newspapers and listen and view for yourselves as you move and live with the rest of humanity, and you cannot possibly deny its truth. This is the world in which we now live, and we ourselves have brought it to its present state. Those who have the vision to see, look at it and hope and pray that it will change before total destruction descends upon it. Believe with everything that you have that wishing will not bring it about. The world is made up of individuals, you, me, and all of our neighbors in this and other lands, and will not and cannot possibly change until we as individuals change. The world at any given time is the reflection of that which each man sends forth from himself, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. For every thought, word, and action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. This is the God-made law of the universe, and man cannot change it. He can only change himself. It is high time for the pendulum to swing in the opposite direction. Time to develop a new lifestyle, one of dignity, self-respect, and self-mastery. It has already started, and many are searching for truth, real truth, as never before. They are no longer willing to accept the long-held-out promises of redemption and salvation through faith, promises which through the centuries have not materialized. They are asking the questions, who am I? Where did I really come from before I entered my mother's womb? Have I lived before? What is the purpose of my existence? Are the scriptures fairy tales, or are they parables that hide the living truth that can be realized only by those who have eyes to see and ears to hear? These are the ones who have realized that there is only one way out. These are the ones who are ready to go on the greatest of all adventures, the search for reality, which they at long last realize is to be found only within themselves. They are the ones who go in search of a real master, a God-realized soul who has paid the full price for his knowledge of truth, one who alone can lead them out of the darkness of ignorance into the light of eternal bliss and happiness, one who can show them the way to unite the soul with its maker. The way is simple. It is to forget original sin and all of its historical offspring, and to concentrate only upon original innocence. It is to live in constant remembrance of God, serving him with all of your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all of these things shall be added unto you. Do this, and you will not only change your own world, but you will become a beacon on a hilltop to light the way for others who seek the truth. In these troublous times, let us all work shoulder to shoulder to build a new world of peace, love, honesty, and trust in God and in one another. Let us forget our religious names and differences, the divisions of race, color, and creed, and kneel down together as brothers and sisters and worship the omnipresent God, who is the one and only Father of us all. I think that it is high time that such an article was written, and it is certainly appropriate at this particular time. Now, I'd like to read to you from Glimpses of Divine Vision by Swami Ramdas. This chapter is entitled Love. Love begets love. Love is life. Love is truth. The highest attainment is love. The loftiest goal is love. The cosmic vision held out in the Gita alone can enable you to attain universal love. This vision, or love, grants you never-failing joy and peace. To love God is to love all, and to love all is to love God. This is the secret of self-realization and liberation, and Ram Nam is the way. Indeed, every moment of your mind in thought, every moment of your tongue in words, every movement of your limbs in activity or work is the play of Shakti. Shakti is nothing but God's love. When we realize that all movement is the movement of that supreme love, we live continuously in a state of divine ecstasy, which is simply inexpressible. Then prem, or love, fills us through and through. In other words, we are soaked in love. The quality of love is anand, which is bliss. There is also the witness of this play, or shakti, the immutable, changeless, all-pervading static aspect of your being, whose quality is ineffable peace. On this unaffected screen of eternal peace dances in flitting forms infinite love, producing sweet, intoxicating music of bliss. Every particle of your body and the whole universe is thrilling with Sri Ram's love. So there is nothing but bliss in all movement, change, and activity. There is nothing but peace in the depths of all forms, result of movement and change. So eternal peace and bliss are the only reality. Everybody wants to eat only sweet things. The thought of bitter things is repulsive to all. Love, pure and glorious love, the immortal divine love, makes us drink always sweetness and joy. Therefore, to open your hearts to the inflow of this intoxicating love and remain ever in the rapture of it is a supreme blessing and purpose of all life. All things pass away. Your petty ambitions and unregulated aspirations are things of the moment. Your pleasures and pains, your success and failures, your exaltations and depressions, and your desires and fancies all pass away. There is only one thing that remains unaltered, permanent, and eternal, and that is divine love. Our Bible reading this morning is chapter 13, beginning with verse 1. From 1 Corinthians, I guess I said that. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gifts of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profiteth me nothing. Charity suffereth long and is kind. Charity envieth not. Charity vaunteth not itself, is not puffed up, doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love never faileth, but where there be prophecies, they shall fail. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, and love, these three, but the greatest of these is love. So, as you can well imagine, I want to speak to you about love being the greatest thing this morning. This is a tremendous chapter. It says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I'm become a sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. How many times do we speak words that do not have love contained within them? I have been going through a great many things lately. It's been a very tough existence physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. But each time I go through one of these sessions within myself, I rise to higher realms within my own being. My mind becomes even more universal. I have told you that I have realized the oneness of God within myself, but that is only the beginning. And we have to rise and rise and rise until finally we become so imbued with the idea of God, with the bliss of God, with the love of God, with the intelligence of God, that there is nothing but God everywhere in this whole wide world. But we are prone to divide love into sections. We love our boyfriends, we love our girlfriends, we love our husbands, we love our wives, then we love our children, we love our friends, and then finally we get around to thinking about loving God, who is the source of all love, whereas that love should come first, foremost, beyond, before, and contained within all things. Until we come to that point of love, love of God in all of its completion, instead of love of self, then we will never be what we should be in Him. I have discovered that it is much more important to love than to be loved, because as ye give, so shall ye receive. And if you give that love out first yourself, then love in great abundance will come to you. I have proven that to myself. And yet there are those to whom I have given great love, and I have done great service to. And many of these have not been what they should have been in God, and have not given love in return. Instead, I have gotten criticism. I have been given false accusations. I have been talked about and spit upon. But this is the way of the cross and the Christ. Did not Christ set the example for all of these things? Everybody pictures him as being so perfect in all things as the Son of Man, even before he went through the crucifixion. And yet, if you will but read the scriptures, you will find that he was a very strong character. He spoke out against the heretics, the infidels, against the Sadducees. against some of the priests and the laws. He spoke out against them violently, and he was not afraid to stand up for the truth that he believed in. He certainly said what he thought about the money changers in the temple. And yet, as I said recently, believe me, there are many money changers in each and every temple. In fact, it is universal. Everybody is concerned with money today. Money to buy this, to buy that, to satisfy the desires of the senses. To gain power, not over only over other people, but over a world. And as a result of it, the world is in chaos. It has to change. It has to change. We think of a mother's love as being supreme. And many people concentrate on God as the mother. And I can remember, as I have told you so many times, Master saying, "The mother is closer than the father." He spoke with a slight accent, and that is true. The very great privilege of bearing a part of God in your own body is given to woman. It is the greatest honor, the greatest privilege, the greatest responsibility in the world. And you must know that every thought, every word, every feeling that you have is going to make that child that is being developed within yourselves. So the mother at that particular time should make her temple a place of love, a place of peace, a place of worship, a place of welcome for that soul which is going to come into existence and be among us. And if she will only do that, that child will be a great spiritual light to light a world. But otherwise, if there's dissension, if there's feelings of reluctance, even of hatred sometimes, of having a child, and sometimes to the point where abortions are sought and performed. This is a terrible travesty against God and against the word love. If we are to build a new world, we ourselves must start with ourselves. And we must learn to love ourselves, not the little self, with all of its hang-ups, with all of its ups and downs, its hatreds, its infatuations, its loves of the moment, but that greater self which is within us, which is the Christ in each and every man the world over. As I have said in this article, it must start with the individual. And as each of us reaches out, as each of us is willing to go within and look at ourselves squarely in the face and change that which is necessary to change, then and only then will this world change from its present condition. It cannot possibly change otherwise. And it says, "And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I can remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing." Just imagine that. You could prophesy. You can understand all of the truths or the mysteries. You could have all knowledge. And you could have all faith, but if you do not have that one ingredient, love, you are nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. So where is this little eye that thinks that it is so large, so big? That one that thinks that it does everything? That one that is so constantly put upon? I have never had as many in all of the years that I have been a minister of God. I have never had as many people coming to me so disturbed. It is taking me a full-time job, believe me, to straighten out all of the things that are happening. And I can't do it. I can only give it all to God and let Him speak through me, act through me in all that I do. But it is really something. I work with it from early morning until late at night. Sometimes I get calls 11 and 12 o'clock at night, and sometimes even during the middle of the night. People in trouble. These are troublous times indeed. And it is reacting on the bodies, on the minds, on the hearts of every single individual. Many people are talking about having aches and pains as they never had them before. It's in the atmosphere, and we have created that atmosphere through the chemicals that we use to spray the food that we eat to keep the insects down, through the atom bombs that we have exploded in the air, through the oil spills in the waters that go into the bodies of the fish that we eat. Our whole universe is becoming polluted. Why? It is because of man's lust for power, because of his thinking only of himself and what he needs, what he wants, and not of God first and then God and everybody else. It is high time that this world changed. We are destroying not only ourselves but our world, and we had better start right where we stand if anything is to change. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profiteth me nothing. There are many people who give and give and give. But you must look in the heart. You must look in the heart and see what is there. Remember, it is not so important what you put into your body. It is only, or what into your mouth, I should say. It is only important what comes out of it. Because what comes out of it many times denotes that you are a murderer, a thief, a robber, an adulterer, whatever. That is what is important. Now, we should not use our bodies as garbage cans, certainly. It is important what you eat. But it is not all important. We should not make food our God. And the higher you go, the higher the vibration of your body. Until there have been those who have gone so high, who have attained such great heights in sainthood, that it was not even necessary for them to eat. Many of them have gone without sleep. I remember my own guru told me once that he had gone 16 days without any sleep. And I believe him. Because during the time that I was down at Mount Washington, during some times, my room was directly under his study. And I would hear him up all night long, anytime I happened to awaken, talking with people, counseling them, advising them, and sometimes giving them what for. I heard him raise his voice a few times. Because there is also the love of the crucible. There are also those who cannot take that love. They come, they put on the garb of humility. But in their hearts there is no humility. There is no real desire to get rid of the little self and to become what they can be in God, masters of themselves. There is none of this at all. And they put on this sham, this show. And they try to make you believe that they are holier than thou. And believe me, they are not. And so the master, through the guidance of God within, then must take that one to task, must do that which is necessary to help them to change themselves. Because there isn't a person on earth who can nor should reach out and say, "My child, I give you God realization," just by a touch of a magic wand on the shoulder. It is a thing to be earned. Everybody wants something for nothing. We're all looking for bargains. And in God there are no bargains. And the way to not have to pay such a tremendous price is to remold your lives into what they should be, to become God people instead of just hanging on to the human within yourselves. To make the effort to become the greatest of that which you can become. To let God so dominate your lives that he permeates every thought, every word, every action, every moment of that life. To surrender yourselves completely, totally, absolutely to him. Then and then alone will your world change. But in the meantime, the work has to be done. So it is up to the guru to do the very difficult task of testing the individual who is not willing to go all the way. Who wants to serve God and mammon too. Who part of the time has his eyes lifted to God. Who part of the time gives lip service. Who wants to look well before his fellow men in the words and the acts and the deeds that come from him. And then the test must be made to change that one. It is a difficult task. So the guru starts in and needles. Apparently fails to give love. I had someone say to me the other day, "But how can you not go to this individual when we are supposed to give universal love? What is all of this talk about universal love when you refuse to enter in. You must do this, they said to me. I said, I don't have to do anything that God doesn't direct me to do. He is my boss. It is not that I don't love God in everyone equally. I do. But I have to do what God directs me to do for the development, for the fulfillment of every single individual. And if it means staying apart for them, if it means pretending I don't like them, then that has to be done. Of holding them out in left field. Everybody wants to get at the guru. Lately I've had quite a few people coming to my door without having telephoned first. And I'm sorry, but that I would like to ask you not to do, because I work by appointment only. I am very busy all of the time. Many times I'm working with people, and I can't be interrupted when I do. And when I am working with people in my home, I even turn off the telephone and take my messages on the recorder call. This is a busy life. It is not that I don't want to see everybody who comes, that I don't want to give them help. But many times things can be taken care of in a few moments over the telephone, where otherwise it would take 2 or 3 hours if I talk to them in person. So I work as God directs me. But I want you to know, each and every one of you, that my love for each and every one of you is absolute and complete. There is nothing I wouldn't do to help you toward your God realization. But sometimes you would ask the question under these circumstances, well, if you love me so much, why won't you ever see me? Why can't I be with you like so-and-so or such-and-such or someone else? I have to do what God directs me to do. And maybe He directs me not to do that because He wants you to stand on your own 2 feet and take the truth which I spend all of my life teaching you and put it into practice yourself instead of using me as a leaning post. You know, I'm only one person. I can only do so much. And I give every moment of my life to serve God in each and every one of you. It is said that the Guru is God in human form. You see, we look always upward. We lift our eyes to the hills, to the skies outside of ourselves, even though we are told that God is to be found only within. But you see, people must have an individual, a person, a bridge between themselves and the infinite, one who is willing and has been willing to make the supreme sacrifice so that they could bring the truth to the world, so that they could uplift the lives of each and every one they meet. And it is in form only that God inspires us to seek Him. So that is why they make this statement that the Guru is God in human form. And the Guru gives such love as is never known in the human state. Because people get involved with their so-called human love, their emotions, the infatuations of the moment. And they suffer when this love that they give out is unrequited, unreturned, unfulfilled. But the love of the Guru goes on forever. I have never known myself in all of my life to turn anybody away who came and said, I am sorry, take me back. Never in all my life. And in the times when I have been hurt the most, with the least little effort on the part of the individual, the love bursts forth, and I'm willing to forgive and to forget and take them in my arms again. But you have to realize that it is not always up to the Guru to go with love, but it is for you to come with love. Not love for the person, but love for God in the person. Love for the universal God that so fills your heart, your mind, and your soul that you are willing to give up everything, family, friends, money, position, and follow that one to the ends of the earth. That is the type of love I had for my Guru. And I demonstrated it. I left a religion that I had been raised in, and still I was an only child. Do you think that was easy? I had to take the wrath of my parents, the hurt, the disappointment. I had to take the criticism of all of my relatives, all of my friends. I've had some of my relatives cut me dead on the street because I had left the church where I was born. There was no acknowledgement that each man comes with the inalienable right to worship God as God directs him to do whatsoever. I have proven my love for God and my Guru in the fact that no matter what I have had to go through, what hurts, what trials, what tribulations. I have hung in there. And I have made him my first goal. And I have made the service to my Guru the paramount service in my life. Because to serve the Guru is to serve God himself. It is not that the Guru needs this. It is that you need it. You need it so that you may develop faith. You may develop love. You may reach out for that something which is forever pulling you, because all of the longing of your heart for love, for all of the great and wonderful and beautiful things, is the unconscious longing of God within you to have you find Him, to go within your temple, to meditate upon Him, to pray to Him and with Him, and realize who and what you are in Him. Until you come to that moment, you're never going to be what you can be in this world or in any other world. And if you don't make the effort now, when it is so important, you're going to have to take birth time after time after time and go through the whole miserable mess again. And this world of opposites is never going to be perfect. It is that which opposes itself. That is your cross. That which opposes itself. That came out of my mouth the other day when I was talking to somebody over the telephone, and all of a sudden it struck me. What a tremendous thing you have just given me, God. Because the cross, the long arm, is that which goes up. It goes up from the bottom where it stands, and it goes up to God. And that which opposes it is the cross. These two arms, the two thieves, the forces of good and evil, the positive and negative, on your own cross. That which opposes itself. So you are constantly opposing your real self when you keep yourself in that state of consciousness. You are not willing to give your all to God in order that you may find your all in Him. But rather it's, Lord, give me, give me, give me. Do this for me. Lord, if you will give me this, I will promise to do so much penance. I will do this and that and the other thing for you. But that isn't the way it works. You seek Him and His righteousness first, and then all of the other things are added unto you. It says also that you must become like little children in order to enter the gates of heaven. Like little children, not childish. Many people are childish. They are so steeped in childishness that they want everybody to do, think, and say exactly that which will make them feel comfortable. They never take into consideration that perhaps the reason that the person isn't giving them their full attention or giving them all that they think they should have in the moment is because that person also has problems, is dwelling on those problems, is perhaps trying to overcome and be the best they can outside. But everything is centered on this little self. What you should do for me in order that you should feel comfortable. And I tell you that it is not what you receive that is important, except God realization. It is what you give. And if you give yourself with all of your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength, then you will find God. And then you will have everything as you need it. The more I go along, the more I realize the tremendous truth that this contains. It says, even though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profiteth me nothing. And I remember the time when I had gone through the crucifixion experience in India, and for 4.5 months, experiences that I have never seen anybody go through and never expect to see. They were so terrible, to the point where this body died. And later on, I was totally paralyzed. This was the state of rigor mortis, the total paralysis of all the whole body, the whole being. All it was the consciousness within it that returned. And my husband said to me, we've got to get you out of here. We've got to take you back to the States and get you medical help. And I said, I will not go until God is finished with me. And he said, if you don't go and get some medical help, he said, they're going to take you up on the hill and burn your body in a funeral pyre. And I said, let them. How many of you love God that much? I said, let them. I am not leaving here until I have been told by God that it is time for me to go. And here was I, one small person, 5'1", totally paralyzed, defying a man 6 feet tall, a big, husky pro football player, former, and with every bit of will I had. And he said, I'll give you 3 days to get well. Well, I didn't get well in 3 days, and I didn't go home in 3 days either. I didn't go until finally the doctor left the ashram. I had nobody to take care of me. And Papa sent Swami Satchitananda to me and said, Mother, you must get some help. And still I rebelled. So Papa came and talked to me, and he looked at me with such love, such compassion in his eyes. He said, but Mother, you must go now. He said, the body must be kept fit to serve. So it was only because I realized that if I destroyed my body through my stubborn will of hanging in there until God said I could go, that I wouldn't be fit to serve him. And so then I agreed to go, and I came home by plane and wheelchair. I had to have every God blessed thing done for me. I had to be fed, I had to be clothed, I had to be washed, my hair combed. Everything had to be done for me. And yet it was a strange thing, because I sat in the midst of this temple here, and I was not depressed at all. I was in pain in one spot, and that was at the base of my spine. That was the only place I could feel anything. And that was because I had gone over to the lavatory, and Father had said to me, do you think you can manage it alone? And I said, yes, you know, the strong will again. So he closed the door and left me standing there. But all of a sudden, as I went to use the commode, there was a big cockroach on top of the seat. Well, obviously, both of us couldn't occupy the place at the same time. And I reached over to brush him off, lost my balance, and fell and hit the base of my spine on a concrete block. And I think I broke it. It shows in the x-rays these days. But I was in excruciating pain there. I didn't have anybody to give me the pokes, as they call shots, anymore, because the doctor had left. And so I tried to give them to myself. With every bit of my will, I tried to make my body move. And I managed to get the needle where I could shoot it, which was right here in my hip. And then it would drop on the floor, and I would sit there and cry because I couldn't make my body do what I wanted it to. Such was my will to go to God. I don't know what more a person can do than to die for God. I don't know what more a person can do to be returned to life and live every moment for God. To be willing to go through every bit of suffering, every test, every trial, every tribulation. That's the kind of love you have to go get and have to have to get there. Then there are some people that say, oh, she doesn't know anything about truth. Forget it. And as a result of it, I've been burned in effigy by people, as I've told you before, who have never even seen me, don't know what I teach or anything about, and they call this Christianity. There is only one God and one religion. And every single religious order with a name to it thinks that that is that one. And it isn't at all. There's one God and one religion, and that is man's need to find God within himself. And it can only be found there. No place else at all. When you come to the point when you are willing to do what I did for Christ, to pick up your cross, which is your body, which is in the form of a cross, and follow him and go through whatever he requires of you because of your great love for him, to die for him if necessary, then you will know that I speak the truth to you, because you will know what comes out of having the courage to do such a thing. You die in order that you might find real and eternal life. You die to the little self, the Son of Man, in order that you might become your greater self, the Son of God, the Christed One, that one who is a light into the world, that one who is universal, who is the creator of this and all of the rest of the stellar systems that we are aware now exist. This is the way it must be. Forget the little self and all of its pettiness, its jealousies, its hatreds, its enmities, and reach out with love for God first. Feel that bliss, that eternal flow within yourself, and you will find such power that it is unbelievable. Sometimes your body is so filled with power that you can scarcely contain it. You have to close your eyes in an effort to hold it in. Your eyes are half-mast as mine are this moment because I am so filled with him. And I'm sure that there isn't a person in this room that can't feel the power of God flowing through this form which he made. It is not my power. These are not my words, not my thoughts. They are his, and they are being given to you in order that you might somehow search within your own hearts and make a solemn vow, a solemn promise, to return to him, to give him all of yourself, to be willing to go through this state of the death of the Son of Man, the human ego, in order that you might become the Holy Ghost, the Divine One of God. I assure you that you are badly needed in this world. We need to stand shoulder to shoulder to get rid of all the failings, the fallacies, the catering to this little self, and be willing to pick up our crosses and follow the Christ in reality. I do not limit the Christ, you see, to the Western world, nor to the Western philosophy, because I know that he is equally present everywhere in every single religion that there is, in every form, in every atom of space. And I know that the other people who do not speak our language are also worshiping that one Christ. Someone said to me not long ago that what I said was tremendous, but they could not accept the philosophy of the East, the mystery of the East, that the mystery of the Christ of the West was still that which held them. And so they were limiting themselves. They were not doing themselves justice. They were limiting the Christ because they were saying that he's in the Western Hemisphere, but he can't possibly be in the Eastern Hemisphere. And yet, if God is omnipresent, then where is he not? Can you say that from here I have to go to there to find him, when the truth of the matter is that he is to be found only within yourself? Can you say that truly you love your brother and say that you are following Christ's great commandment? A new commandment I give unto you, that ye love one another as I have loved you, and your brother as yourself, and still call the others heathen, say that they don't have God? Who made them? He is omnipotent. His is the only power. Who knows about it? Do they know with their little puny minds? He is omniscient. His is the only, the one and only knowledge in this whole world. He alone is in this whole universe. But man, in his blindness, in his idea of separation from God, thinks of first himself and then his relationship to God. He doesn't think of God first and then his relationship to God. It is God reaching down to lift himself out of wherever he has placed himself. And he suffers great agony as he does this. But pain, as Swami Ram Dass said, was also ananda, or bliss. Too many people concentrate on pain as being unbearable. Believe me, it is not. Because I bear such pain in this body that you wouldn't believe, sometimes to the point where the body is almost immobile. And I find usually that I am bearing it for someone else. Not that I took it, but that it was given unto me. Because having given myself to God, then such a one becomes the ransom for many. It is not an easy life, but I also found that if I will put my full attention upon him, that the pain leaves. I don't know whether or not I told you, but I had a very bad heart attack a couple of years ago when I was on my way from Victoria to Courtney. It was so bad that I didn't know if I was going to make it. Wilmer was driving me, and he said, "What'll we do?" We were out in the sticks on the way up between here and nowhere. There weren't any doctors around. And I said, "Well, the only thing we can do is to drive on." And I said, "Never mind, I'll take care of it." And he was really very, very frightened. So I sat there and thought for a few moments, and I thought, I have no one to lean on, no medication, nothing. It is just between God and myself. I'm going to fix my mind totally upon him. And I did this. I went beyond all duality. I don't know how long I was in that state. Prior to that, before I went into that state, my pulse was beating so that it was just like a, I don't know what, just like this. I came out of it And here was my heart going pump, 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 pump. So I reached my wrist over to Wilmer and let him feel it. He said, "My God, I am impressed." I didn't do a thing except put my mind on God. That's the thing you have to do, to put your mind on Him. Give Him all of your mind, your heart, your soul. And then all of the problems are taken care of. Don't you realize that He already knows everything that you need? Every problem that you have? Because He is your real self. He is the only real dweller in this temple, which is made without hands. That's where you have to go. And if you will go to Him first, then all of the other things will be taken care of. Years ago, I told you a story, and I'd like to repeat that story because many have come since and they may not have heard it. The story is about a little girl who was fatherless. She had a mother, but no father. And her name was June. She had a sweet, flower-like face. She was a very, very good child. But she also had a lot of difficulty because of the fact that she didn't have a father. So when she went to school, the children ignored her. They ostracized her. And she was deeply hurt, and she couldn't understand it. She came to her mother and she said one day, "Mother, why do I not have a father?" And the mother, realizing that something must have happened, took the child on her lap and held her close to her and said, "My child, everyone has a father. Everyone has the Heavenly Father, who is the Father of us all. But Mother, why do I not have a human father?" "Well, the Heavenly Father apparently has so arranged it this time, my child, but He being the greatest, the source of all fathers, if you will go to Him, then you will find that indeed you have a wonderful, wonderful father." Child continued to go to school, and finally it got so bad with the way the children in school felt about her, because children can sometimes be very cruel, that they started throwing rocks at her. They bruised her. This hurt her very deeply. But still, because her mother had to work so hard, she took in washing for a living, which was another reason that the mother and child were ostracized, because they were of the lower caste, so to speak. She didn't want to add to her mother's burden, so she said nothing. But one evening, when something very terrible had happened to her at school, she could stand it no longer, but she didn't complain. She asked her mother a question. "Mother, have you ever been stoned?" And her mother said, "No, my child, why do you ask?" And she said, "I wanted to know if you had ever been stoned." "No," she said. And she went and got the Bible, and she took the child again on her lap, and she read that most wonderful story of all, the woman taken in adultery, and how Jesus had challenged those who would stone her to write their names in the sand, to be the first to accuse her. And when he looked around, none were present. "Those who have not sinned, let them cast the first stone," he said. Child didn't quite understand all of it, but it seemed to comfort her. And in her aloneness, it seemed that something happened to her, something inside of herself. And she felt a lifting up, an ecstasy, a bliss, a desire to reach somebody or something she didn't know who or what. But it was very prevalent in her. She did the best she could at all times, but her life was very, very difficult, as you can imagine. One day she heard the children talking about a man who was coming to town. And all of the ladies of the town were very, very excited. It was said that he was a heathen because he came from a foreign land and he had dark skin. But still, he was the lion of the hour, and they were all anxious to get their share of whatever publicity they could get by affiliating themselves with him for the moment. And they had asked him to give a lecture. Well, June found a real longing in her heart to meet this man for some reason or other. She didn't know what was calling her, but she felt this. But she couldn't get in because you had to give a silver offering, because it was this offering was going to furnish something that the club needed, and that's why principally they were having the man there. He was to speak about something literary, they thought, but they weren't really quite sure of what the subject was. So finally the day came when the man was to speak. And June thought, well, at least I can see him. She had seen a poster of him, And she had thought that his eyes were the most beautiful she had ever seen. They were filled with a great light, a great luster. And the face took on a Christ-like appearance. But much to her sorrow, she saw a great big splash of mud on it. Somebody had thrown mud at this person's picture. So she went to the place where he was to speak. And on the other side of the lawn, the walkway leading up to where they were to enter, all of the school children were gathered, and they were giggling among themselves. Finally, the man came out of the side door, and he came along, and the children on the other side of the hedge threw stones at him. And then they ran away, all laughing and shouting. But June stood her ground very bravely, and she walked up to him, and she looked into his face, and she said, "I am very sorry that they threw stones at you." She said, "They have thrown them at me too, and I know how much they hurt." And he looked down at her with all love, with all compassion, with all tenderness. And he said, "What is your name, child?" And she said, "My name is June." He said, "And your father and mother?" "I don't have a father," she said, "and that's why they throw stones at me." And he said, "Everyone has a heavenly father." And she said, "That is true, because that is what my mommy told me also." And he said, "My child, know that the Heavenly Father is to be found here and here." So he touched her at the point between the eyebrows and over the heart center. And he said, she said to him, "Would you tell me how to pronounce your name?" She said, "I know it, but I cannot pronounce it." So he pronounced that name, which was forevermore to mean the word master to her. This is the way I feel about my guru. I love him with everything I have. I have given my life to him. I gave it to him long ago because he saved it not once but many times. I would not be before you if it not had been for God in him. The truth that he taught me, the methods that he taught me to use so that I might find that truth within himself, within myself, remain with me to this day. And I have but to close my eyes or open them. It doesn't make any difference. But I know that he is with me, that he is guiding me, that he is directing me, his form of God, in all that I do. My greatest prayer, my greatest wish, is that you will remove the veils of ignorance from your eyes, that you will find it in your hearts to reach out and to seek the one and only inimitable Christ within yourself.